Welcome to Dangerous Oasis, episode 9 of the Old Langford History Podcast. I'm your host, Sue Harper. In this episode, I'll look at some of the known drowning tragedies and the circumstances surrounding them. Despite these sad events, I also want to tell you the story of what I consider to be the guardian angel of Langford Lake, as she is truly the definition of a hero. Langford is blessed with three lakes within its boundaries: Florence, Langford, and Glen Lakes. In summer, they are full of those enjoying the fresh water, whether they be swimming, paddling, fishing, or boating. And while we don't see it anymore, Langford Lake was also at one time known for its great winter skating. It was advertised as some of the best skating in Victoria, and to grab your skates and take the ENN to the lake for a fun time. But while we are blessed with these lakes, as history tells us, they can also be a dangerous oasis. Now, I'm only going to go up to 1980 regarding this research. Anything more recent, I believe, is too fresh in the minds of those that have been impacted. Drowning can easily happen and can creep up on you out of nowhere. I know what it's like to lose someone. My cousin Reggie, who was in his 20s and living in England, drowned when I was about 6 or 7, leaving a wife and a young child. He'd taken a floating mattress out onto the water and either slipped or rolled off and drowned. While there were many people around, no one saw him, and he couldn't swim. It was a mistake that cost him his life. I still remember my mom taking that phone call. So I'd like to dedicate this episode to my cousin Reggie. While these stories are sad to hear, I hope it will remind people of the potential dangers, to learn how to swim, and whenever on or near a lake or water, to be observant for anyone in trouble. The first newspaper reported drowning I've come across was on August 9, 1865, which was headlined, "Melancholy Incident Occurs at Langford Lake." Mark Corbinaire, age 30, and the eldest son of P. Corbinaire, a merchant in Victoria, had drowned. About 50 of the city's French citizens had gone out to the lake for a lunch picnic. While dancing was taking place, Mark had walked to the water where some boys were swimming. He took off his clothes, entered the water, and swam out to the middle of the lake. Shortly afterwards, the boys noticed that he had disappeared, but they didn't think much of it and didn't inform anyone for half an hour, when they walked to the picnic party and told others. Some friends then went to the water but failed to see anything of Mark and just returned to the picnic, not really concerned. But the missing man never appeared, and much later, an alert was raised about the situation with more of the partygoers. A few returned to the lake and found Mark's clothes at the water's edge, and as stated in the paper, it was evident to them the man had met a watery grave. Information was sent to Victoria about the incident, and then several headed to the lake to search and eventually find the body. An inquest was held on August 14th, which declared it an accidental drowning. The amazing thing about this is the nonchalant attitude the picnic goers had about one of their friends disappearing. It seems that in the 1800s, this was the going attitude when anyone went missing, no matter what the cause. Another example of this attitude, but under different circumstances, can be found in episode 6, "Who Has Lost a Friend?" of the Old Langford History Podcast. In 1924, the city was gripped with the drowning of 14-year-old Barbara Eldridge while swimming in Glen Lake. The headline read, "Found Dog Guarding Mistress's Clothing." Barbara Eldridge went missing from her Luxton home on September 3rd. As reported in the newspaper, the discovery of the missing girl's clothing on the margins of the lake and the absence of her bathing suit from the Eldridge house were evidence pointing to the conclusion that the girl had drowned. Her father, Herbert Eldridge, and brother had returned from Victoria to their summer home at Luxton at 7:15 in the evening and had expected to find their evening meal prepared for them by Barbara. But there was no food on the table, and Barbara was not to be found. They went to the lake, which was only 2 or 3 minutes from the house, and came across her clothing at the water's edge, guarded by her Airedale puppy, only a few months old. They immediately notified the police, phoning from a neighbor's house. Soon after, a Mrs. D. Saunders, who lived close by, said she'd seen Barbara walking by at about 5 in the afternoon. Before the police arrived, Father Eldridge had carried the girl's clothing back to the house, with the exception of a stocking that the puppy was guarding and wouldn't let go of. As it was late, dragging operations were impossible, as there was no boat available and darkness had set in. The police would wait until morning. Barbara's brother, noted in the newspaper report as being an accomplished swimmer, and had been giving his sister swimming lessons since they had moved to the summer home a few weeks ago. The paper stated that Barbara had learned how to float really well, but was not able to swim more than a few yards. The police immediately formed the theory that Barbara had wanted to go a swim before setting out dinner, and her lack of skill had resulted in her death. They didn't consider that she may have become lost in the woods, because the trail to the lake was well defined. They also believed that if that was the case, the puppy who was her companion and stuck to her like glue would have followed her instead of guarding her clothes. Glen Lake would be dragged for Barbara's body the next day, but the newspaper never stated that the body was found. Despite it being front page news, it's unclear if an inquest was held, as nothing was reported in the newspaper or the index at BC Archives. The event was never reported on again, and I've found no trace where she's buried. The next event, the double drowning in February 1936, is extremely heartbreaking. Apparently, hundreds of visitors from Victoria and surrounding districts had been skating Langford, Florence, and Glen Lakes in the days leading up to the tragedy. Details were reported in the newspapers over several days. It made front page headline news at the Daily Colonist with the tagline, "Double Tragedy at Langford Lake." It is here that Harry S. Green and Miss Jessie Alexander met their tragic end. The double tragedy is believed to have occurred between 9:30 and 10 o'clock, as friends of the couple had seen them skate away into the darkness with the intention of skating around Langford Lake. They had said they'd be back by 10, but when they hadn't returned by midnight, their friends became worried and phoned the city police headquarters. At 1 a.m., provincial police officers took charge, and Sergeant Richard Harvey and Constable Gerald Davis went to the lake. Nothing was found that night, but at daybreak, they located a stretch of open water and skate marks on the ice leading towards the break. The police estimated the break in the ice was about 60 feet wide and had not frozen over in the cold weather. Using a boat and grappling hooks, after a little more than an hour, they found the bodies. Watches were taken by the police from the bodies of the victims. Jessie Alexander's had stopped at 9:40, while Harry Green's had stopped at 9:36. The location where the accident occurred was on the north side of the lake, approximately 300 yards from a point that was locally known as Wenger's Bay, and probably not more than 400 yards from shore. The water was estimated to have been 75 feet deep. It was not known if the couple skated into the open water shortly after they left or when they were returning. Police reported that the skate marks were visible on both sides of the break. Friends of Harry Green had said that he was familiar with the ice conditions, but believed he may have misjudged in the darkness and failed to see the open water. While there were other skaters less than a quarter of a mile away, they'd heard nothing. Harry Green had gone to the lake with his 12-year-old son, while Jessie Alexander was with a party of skaters, including her sister Marion. Both were widely known in Victoria. Jessie had been born in Victoria and was actually employed at the Legislative Building as a stenographer. Harry was the operator of Vancouver Island coach lines, which ran between Victoria and Nanaimo, and had come from Seattle 25 years earlier. Jessie Alexander was 25 and Harry Green was 44 at the times of their deaths on February 18, 1936. Both are buried at Royal Oak Burial Park in Saanich. Now on to Sunday, July 2, 1950, when little 9-year-old Gail Schuyler was found face down in Glen Lake at about 8 p.m. She'd been swimming with her father, James, but he had left her alone and had gone to get dressed. On his return, she was found thick in weeds and mud face down. She was pulled to the shore by John Williams, whose home was right by the accident. The Langford Volunteer Fire Department, under Chief Rod Bales, worked on Little Gale for over 2 hours in attempts to revive her. But unfortunately, everything failed, and she was pronounced dead. Gail Schuyler's death certificate can be found at the BC Archives. She was born in Winnipeg and had lived in Victoria with her parents for about 5 years. She's buried in Colwood Burial Park. And yet again, this time at Langford Lake, a young 7-year-old met his fate. On June 13, 1980, Sean Patrick Merck drowned sometime between 7:30 and midnight. He had gone by himself to the lake to go fishing. He lived on Lee Road, and his parents were Leo and Noreen. The boy's fishing gear and lure were found sitting on the dock, and nearby, Colwood RCMP found the body in about 5 feet of water. His death was deemed an accident on June 17th, 1980. So with all these tragedies, I hope you haven't gotten too depressed, as I want to share an amazing, happier story that I hope will make you feel much better. On August 14th, 1959, an article appeared in the Times Colonist on how a boy was saved from drowning at Langford Lake. It's entitled, "Young Billy Remembers When a Woman Saved His Life." The story came about as it had been reported that Mrs. Hazel Baines had lost her social assistance money, which she relied on each month. She had cashed the check and had lost her purse. The boy, named Billy, had sent her his $5 allowance to help her out, but that was just the beginning. The story went, 2 years ago, Hazel had gone swimming at an empty public beach on Langford Lake, just off of Goldstream Avenue. Hazel actually lived at 1120 Donner Avenue. She waded out past the drop-off into deep water and felt something well below the surface. Hazel dived down to see what she'd bumped, and she found under the water a 7 or 8 year old boy. The paper quoted her as saying, "I pulled him to shore and applied artificial respiration. Once revived, I bawled him out, and that is no understatement. He said he was going to learn to swim where nobody could watch him, and he chose the empty Langford beach." Hazel, not the one to walk away, sent Billy back into the water and taught him how to dog paddle before driving him most of the way home. She said she later received a letter from the boy's mother, thanking her and explaining that the father had not been told because he'd get very angry. Hazel commented on the money that Billy had sent her. "It's a very thoughtful child that would do a thing like that." But this isn't the end of Hazel Baines' life-saving story. On August 26, 1959, it was revealed that she had saved twins in 1958 as well. A Hungarian immigrant by the name of Stefan Donoveski had read the Billy story and had also decided to send money to Hazel with a note thanking her for saving his two twin daughters from drowning in Langford Lake. Hazel Baines remembered vividly the event. It was a summer's day in 1958 when she spotted a woman waist-deep in water. "She was obviously looking for something," said Mrs. Baines. "I went in and found this unconscious little girl. On shore, I began to give her artificial respiration, the kind you pull up the arms, I don't know what it's called. All the time, the woman was pulling at my arm and pointing to the lake. Finally, I realized there was someone else in the water. I found the second little girl. They were twins, just about ready to go to school. When I got her to shore, I didn't know which girl to work on first. I finally decided it was the one that had been in the water the longest. When I revived her, I turned to the other one. I thought she was dead. I turned her over and decided to try mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. I'd never tried it before. I think I read it in a comic book. However, I managed it, and after a while, the girl came around." The girl's mother, who was unable to speak English, was hysterical, according to Hazel, and so she took the mother and the girls to her home and gave them hot drinks. As Hazel stated at the time, "I did it to save their lives, not for the publicity." But Hazel Baines, whether you wanted the publicity or not, you're a true hero in my eyes. As a side note, Hazel was the daughter of Jim Baines, one of the original pioneers of Langford Lake, who lived at 1152 Goldstream Avenue and owned a small store called the Langford Lake Store. What happened to Hazel later in life, I've been unable to find any information, along with where she is buried. I'd love to leave some flowers on this hero's grave. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Old Langford History Podcast. There are hundreds of thousands of podcasts out there, so I appreciate you listening to mine. Don't forget, you can also support my podcast so you don't miss future episodes. And if you become a patron, you'll get a personal shout out of appreciation. I've got many more intriguing episodes coming up, so stay tuned. And thanks again for listening to the Old Langford History Podcast.